Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. In moments, we will be cahooting with one of my favorite astro-political, collegial, cultural guides, Daniel Gemario. First, a few announcements. This weekend is KPFA's Craft Fair, June 18th and 19th, and that will be at the Craneway Pavilion in Richmond, California. On Sunday, June 19th at 3 p.m., I will be there. And speaking. And then we are in this powerful time, the waxing full moon to the summer solstice that we'll be animating fully this hour. But on Monday, June 20th, my rousing solstice address, Flora Fauna 2016, with cohort Amakayla Gaston, calling in the Orishas of Woof, will be at 7 p.m. at Open Secret Bookstore in San Rafael, 415-457-4191, to make sure you have a place. Now, onward. It is such a powerful summer solstice, waxing full moon. You know, we are spiraling the rising renaissance of reverent ingenuity out into the memosphere, aspiring to liberate the everyone from the con of polarity into spiraling. So there's so much to say, but again, I want to welcome Daniel Gemario joining us from the Philippines so that we can co-animate all of the opportunities so generously proffered to us by the Sky Earth Story. Welcome, Daniel.
Hey, thanks. Good to be back on your show again. It's been a few months, but always wonderful to riff together with you.
That's great. So, yes, and you have your own event also, a virtual event that you can tell people about on Saturday the 18th as well?
It's actually not a topical kind of thing. It's not a current events event, but it's for people who are interested in the shamanic astrology paradigm. So it's wide open to beginners, anyone. I'll be talking for about an hour and a half about Venus and Mars and the moon and the ascendant in particular. And then we're going to have a half hour of short mini readings to demonstrate our techniques. So that's we have about 300 people signed up for it so far. It's an opportunity to do outreach to be able to connect with people in the mainstream, basically, not necessarily, expert astrologers about the usefulness of the techniques we use.
Well, let's talk about the rising renaissance, the animating of the desirable story, this powerful summer solstice. And yes, as I was saying, like how to be agents of cool response rather than hot reaction in this field that we're all moving into. So anywhere you want to dive in, I love you as the guide of the Mars cycles. Certainly the dance of Mars and Venus equally within us all and out there in the world, if that's where you want to,
I'm very fascinated with the current Mars cycle. In the shamanic astrology way of looking at the Mars cycle, it's right around those days that Mars rises as in the east. It's at when the moon is setting, the so-called acronychal rising of Mars. And this time we couldn't have missed it because it was right with the previous full moon. So we look back on May 21, May 22nd, in that zone, Mars rose, and that began, in our way of looking at it, the next 2.5 year journey of that version of masculinity in both men and women. So Mars symbolizes a particular version of the masculine journey, not men, but the masculine journey. And it has to, this time it has to do with the sign of Sagittarius. And that has to do with the quest for meaning and purpose and the love of truth. That's obviously the idealized version of it. There's a shadow expression of it we can get into. But the time period we're currently in now, where Mars is in its retrograde loop in the latter degrees of Scorpio, is in a portion of the sky where there are no stars, no constellations. It's like an area of the sky that the Greeks saw as unformed stars. It was a very important area, kind of like the silence between notes and music. And it's important to honor those spaces where there isn't any specific story coming through. Sure, it's in the sign of Scorpio, but there's no star story that is coming through in that area along the ecliptic. So there's all kinds of possibilities inherent at this time period. And you can connect it to some of the political stuff that's going on, like the fact that where Mars is currently happens to be where the rising sign is of both Hillary and Bernie. Also, the south node of Hillary is in the same area where Mars is going to be over these next weeks.
Wait, I have to come back. So what is the birth time you used for Hillary?
8:02. Let's see. 8:02 a.m., generating 2207 Scorpio rising.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay.
Totally, yeah.
and Bernie's at 19 plus, but okay, that's very, very intriguing. All right, so now
Caroline, I had Bernie as 12:27 p.m. That may not be accurate, but that's the latest thing I saw, and that generates 2508 Scorpio rising.
Very well. Mm-hmm. Okay, we like it either way. That's great. All right. Yes, I didn't want to. I wanted to just be a sidebar to your ongoing riff. That's excellent. Keep going.
Right. So the shadow of Mars in putting its attention on Sagittarius for the next couple of years is, of course, fundamentalism. You know, like I have the truth. Nobody else does. And because I'm not clear really inside, if I have to be honest about it, that I'm not really sure I know what the truth is, but I want to make sure everybody else actually agrees with what I believe, the essence of fundamentalism, which unfortunately is the shadow of the Sagittarian Mars. What I find intriguing about the current time is that it is in the combination of Venus and Mars. Venus is invisible now. It's on the other side of the sun, so it's Venus in the underworld, while Mars is in this very interesting time where it is hardly moving at all. In fact, it's just slowly moving backwards right now. But it's in this area of the sky where there are no stars, no constellations, kind of out in the nether land, in the twilight zone, we could say, between the scorpion and the scales in the sky.
And I do just want to interject that Mars will station exactly at 23 plus Scorpio, which is the sun degree of Terence McKenna, and the image for the Sabian symbol for that degree is man with a sermon on a mount, which was very Terence. And I just want to bring into the council Mars stations there going, okay, that sizzly, savvy, entheogenic guiding, as he said about DMT, death by astonishment. I think entheogenic journeying is one of the skills we want to kind of cultivate, going, all right, we're going with that, but also Sermon on a Mount. So yeah, so Mars goes back there, yes. Now back to you, Daniel.
And 23, as I mentioned, is like the south node of Hillary. So, I mean, it's actually representing her lineage. I mean, basically
right.
The background of himself coming into the light, both the shadow and the light of it. And obviously the sign of Scorpio does definitely have associated with it a fair amount of shadow. Although we are only here trying to idealize and empower what is essential and valuable and positive and helpful about Scorpio.
But I did want to pause here because as you know, I just want to do a brief shout out to the Peninsula Hospital in Burlingame, California, that rescued me from the San Francisco airport where I had an exciting emergency surgery. I just want to do a shout out to people doing their job well. But when I then came back and got to recover under the sky story, and there was Mars rising in Scorpio opposite at that point Mercury in the last degree of Taurus, and I was going, ooh, for all of us, you know, to compost the vitriol of the Mars and Scorpio, and the vitriol about justified or not, yes, about Hillary going into Mercury Taurus, going, what does the Earth want? Let's take all of that kind of and put it into again cooperating with the Earth. And the last little thing I wanted to put in to all of us from late great ally ancestor Nelita Anderson, raised from birth as a kahuna in Hawaii. And she said, she also with planets at 23 plus Scorpio. And she said in their training, lifelong training as a kahuna, she said they had to learn poison and harm. And she said not to use that, but in the body of a person or the body of a culture, the killing points are the same as the healing points. The difference is intention. And I think before our ever expanding council, it's like we all might say, yes, possibly in past lives or even this life might have abused power. Yes, okay. But we are really clear now that our intention is healing. I just want to put that before as kind of Mars station point. Yeah.
In our view of it, in our school, the shadow of the Scorpio Mystery School had been a misunderstanding, that there was a scarcity of power and life force in the universe. So therefore, in the training, they had to continually be watching their back and actually be prepared to take it wherever they found it to increase their own life force. But we have become aware now more recently that since there's an infinite amount of life force available in the universe, that it's really not necessary to rip anybody else's off. It's just that you need to learn the ways of maximizing your own allotment, which you can do without ripping off anyone else. So we can see actually represented by these two people in the Democratic Party in the Democratic primaries, both with Scorpio rising, attempting to come to terms with what is the nature of connecting into phenomenal amounts of life force without the need to control or manipulate others.
Yeah, and then the larger cultural kind of dynamic, too, going, all right, everybody, everything into Pluto's cauldron, going, you know, is it equal Mars and Venus? Is it equal men and women? Is it equal humans and the rest of creatures on this planet? Right. Can the truth be said? Yes, we ladle it out. No, we throw it back in. So the shadow of all these traditions, so it's true, the shaman shadow is, as you said, in a different form, the addiction to having an enemy. Those people are out to get my, steal my chi, and we go, no, that we don't have time for that. We're done with that oppositional dynamic. Carry on. Exactly. And it does seem that part of the dynamic, Bernie is being so deft as a wizard. He gave a speech in Washington, D.C. last Thursday. It was an hour and a half, and it was so good. It was really everything important. And again, that we learn to cooperate with the earth, and we owe an invaluable debt of gratitude to our First Nation people here, to whom, and everything was really consummate. And it was very clear, he's not going away. We're not going away. This is a renaissance. And for years, we've been loving the book by James Carr's Finite and Infinite Games, the finite games about winning, the finite game of politics, infinite game about renaissance, keeping everything in play. And that's what's going on, right? I mean, that's the global, here we go, this is, you know.
Well, and he's definitely a miracle. The fact that he would show up here at this time, right in his nodal return, at a point of reuniting with his original theme for current life purpose. But what I find amazing, just in this our opportunity to talk about this right now, today and tomorrow. I mean, tomorrow Uranus is conjunct as Mars, exact. And meanwhile, the Jupiter transit is going right over his Sun. I mean, these few days. I mean, this is such an expanded and on purpose, on track point for him.
And the quality of, Jupiter in Virgo, healing medicine stories that embrace diversity, the square to Saturn, really great. And I don't know if you saw, he did a fantastic 5-minute ad in California, and it was just this extraordinary black man narrating his difficult journey in Baltimore, and he killed somebody when he was 17, and he goes into prison and 17 years and education, and but very, very powerful, incredibly kinned, and emerges and going, that's why I'm for Bernie, for education more than prisons. But it was a phenomenal, all-inclusive, I'd never seen anything like it in politics, a medicine story of redemption. And it was just very powerful. So in regard to dreaming his weird, playing his role in destiny, he's doing a very consummate job, and continues, and has been, his statements too, very much, it's what we can all get behind. We're inaugurating a story. Those who support this story of sane reverence have full support. That's all we need to say, And those who don't, come. We aspire to influence you over here. But is that part of your? Does that feel right to you?
Yes, totally. Since I am just for the at the moment bringing up the astrology on what's happening with Sanders, it turns out that in November, the transit of the North Node, which I was referring to before as his nodal return, and we place a lot of emphasis on the nodal return cycle, is a time to realign or connect at a higher octave with one's life purpose. And so he's in that fourth one. It's like the fourth nodal return that he's in. But the North Node actually reaches his midheaven in November. So it seems pretty clear that that he is dedicated in the best way he possibly can to staying in the game. Which is why I believe he's frustrating certain mainstream Democrats, like, why doesn't he drop out? But he's definitely got a mission. He's on track with what his mission and purpose statement in life is. And that's not even bringing up the moon and Mars in Aries of being this black and white all-in warrior for, you know, his mission and purpose. It's so inspiring, actually.
And creative disruption. I mean, we've all been liberated and things have been revealed. You know, here in the domestic front, you might not have ever been in chained to the con of corporate or cable news. But I used to watch, you know, 2 hours a night of MSNBC. No more. No more. Because the collar, the constraints are too tight. And it was just like, well, that's, you know, irrelevant, completely owned, and therefore incompetent. And so 2 hours liberated to, again, the storytellers, which is all of us, you know, again, so we're liberated, the con, the trickster and the con, the con, you know, and the mass cons. There's a lot of revelation and disruption. I do love people bringing Eris, the goddess of disruption, in. That's 23 plus Aries, conjoining Uranus. And so creative disruption, and that's on Bernie's Mars right, yeah. Now. Yeah, exactly. You know, and Moon, rah, 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 rah. So it is, you know, it's like this is larger than politics. I mean, or larger than the previous definitions of politics. This is like, and that's why I think it's so crucial to, you know, as Carr says in that book, Finite Infinite Games, the Renaissance was not against anything. It was an irresistible magnetizing invitation, again, this theater of education and the earth, and here we go, and to be able to, all the wizards, the likes of yourself and the part of everyone listening to direct collective attention, the art of directing collective attention on behalf of us all. So it is pretty thrilling. So yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, Bernie's chart is smoking, and with Hillary, her South Node, 23 Scorpio, Sermon on the Mount, meaning, yeah. She remembers she gave one once. I mean, what's your thought on that?
On which part? I'm sorry, which part?
Just on Hillary's chart and the South Node of the Moon at 23 plus Scorpio, Sermon on the Mount. What's your understanding of that? That could you just?
Well, my own view on it is less. These days, I have been putting less attention on the Sabian symbols. However, the shamanic astrology take on this would be is the South Node happens to be in her first house. So it's so if we look at her lineage, it was totally, completely just about herself. I mean, it's just, I can do it all myself. That one of her major challenges in life as a human being is to learn how to collaborate, to actually bring in other voices, other people, not just the ones who agree with you. And whether, I don't know to what extent that's been mastered. There's so much else on her chart that's really just about her. You know, Mars in Leo, Scorpio rising, Venus in Scorpio. But her lesson is the learning of collaboration and getting off this thing that it's just all, it's like her against the world.
Yes. You know, again, there's been so much revelation and that's where there's a lot of vituperative in which people go, no, I just can't vote for her. And then there's the Hillary people. And I guess it's the sense of we're electing this story. If she says if expediency is her problem, then let it be our strategy. If she's saying, I mean, I don't know, these are complex matters before all the council, and everything's a swirl, so we really it's only inch by inch. But so if we go, all right, if she goes, I can get things done, even if it's, you know, then we go, all right, here's what to get done. There's the program. That's where this is where we're going. There you go. So I guess the Hillary supporting people. who we want to be everybody's an ally somehow, and the analyte going, do you support this story? Then you call upon the better parts of her angels. That's your job. You support Hillary to come into. I'm not sure, you're off in the Philippines, but observing. You were watching.
Well, yeah, I wanted to come back to that for a moment. Thank you, yeah. Caroline. That just recently in some of the alternative news reports, they talk about how Google has essentially merged itself with the DNC. Schmidt right. is like such an insider there. Well, being over here, I mean, I do keep track of things like Counterpunch and Liberty Blitzkrieg and some other really good sources of alternative news. But I also have my Google News that I look at, right? And it is just so obvious. I mean, you mentioned about MSNBC, of course, but I mean, that's if you go to one of their sites, which is just as bad as any of the rest of them now. But it's clearly manipulated. It's unbelievable how few stories there are that give other than that just sort of basic corporate view. It's stunning, actually, when you get into it.
Yeah. Spacing out. That reminds me, spacing out. I do want to just bring back in that, you know, Neptune dreams, vision, yearning, imagination, how a culture tells itself its own story through the images and music that move through collective mind. So Neptune's stationing now, meaning it looks like it's standing still as of last Monday, going, ooh. And this is the week right now also, you know, part of this grand mutability where everything's in play. Everything's been play. I mean, there's no sense being vituperative because it's changing. It's all a swirl. And, you know, tomorrow, Fridays, will be the exact Saturn square Neptune, which I think is, you know, part of the re-wedding, the renaissance that we're all a part of the re-wedding of learning. And you can bring Mars back into its rendezvous with Saturn because we get to see that dance at night in the sky. What a great sky story it is. So it's also that kind of dedication to learning Sagittarius, re-wedded to its mythological cocoon that was always the way in which science was handed down and botanical knowledge and astronomical knowledge was handed down, encoded and embedded in mythological formula. And once those got stripped, you know, going, no, to hell with symbolic language and myth and fairy tales, that's all hooey. We are straight progress science guys going to put mackerel genes in this tomato. And now really is going, no, the re-wedding of all of that back together.
So you and I individually, personally, are both Saturn-Neptune people. I mean, the Saturn and Neptune being very strong elements of how we would view the world. And that's, to me, that's how do we keep the vision and the dream of how things, quote, should be in combination with reality, you know, connecting with actually how the world actually is, putting those two together. And that the Saturn-Neptune relationship is bringing so many of the themes of history up for now. You know, like, okay, what was good about communism, but what do they miss out on? You know, what was good about socialism, but what do they possibly miss out on? The different ways in which capitalism would try to address a missing piece, and back and forth between Saturn and Neptune. And the U.S. chart is a really good example of that. It's like the contrast between the Senex, the old man or old woman with the rules, the extremely critical, judgmental side, but also the puer, the puer or the puella, that all things are possible. There's so much of that on the original chart of the U.S. So, I mean, I find it amazing that this whole nine-month period of the first 9 months of this year is Saturn on the U.S. ascendant. I mean, that's using Rajar's chart, his rectification, the 14th degree or 13th degree of Sagittarius rising. And we're right in that zone right now, hugely.
So with that, I love a friend was asked recently, you know, what is your definition of maturity? And he said to have access to all of your resources, and not resources like exploiting nature. Each person, really the astrological language, in a sense, guides people to their resources. So might you think that Saturn on the U.S. ascendant is, well, I mean, we have this giant, you know, man baby, as John Stewart says, and everything, you know, running for office, this monstrous animation. description of the worst aspects of American murderous vulgarity kind of cartooned out there. But, but on the other hand, again, the call to maturity and the embrace of diversity and tolerance and the, wisdom mm-hmm. dynamic that is so much a part of Bernie. So are you viewing it as, the shadow poison flushed to the surface, but there's a deep good thing, that's our assignment anyway, a deep good thing going on?
I think you just explained it pretty well from your side. It's like they do represent those two tendencies, the extremes of both, actually, in many respects. I'm being a democratic socialist myself, I certainly have my own personal opinions on what needs to come back in, but it's been so relegated to the dustbin for so long, and for some of their own problems too. I mean, they weren't honoring the earth before. There was a disconnect from spirituality. I don't mean religion, but spirituality itself. Both forces are like a standing off from each other right now, in much the same way as the cultural battle was happening in the late 60s, the culture wars. There's another version of it happening at this particular time, but it's bringing in other features other than the counterculture.
I will be happy to go to both conventions actually as part of Pacifica's news press coverage thing. So we can stay in touch through all of this. When I was hovering over the, going, do I want to go to the Republican convention too and talk to a friend? He goes, how strong is your stomach? And I go, pretty strong. Well, you always do see things because, we go into the underworld to find allies anywhere. But I think it's so crucial that the outside that, and the inside and the to and fro that we not get snookered into oppositional polarity, not to be wusses, but I want to throw back to you the dance of Mars and Venus, just even on simple levels. Mars points our attention, like, we aroused in a good way. Like, in a really simple level, there's a street light outside my house that is just so punitively bright and horrible. It's like, and the plants are leaning away from it. It deprives the thing of night, and I really like but then I realized, as long as I'm I can't Venus magnetize the elegant solution, which is the delinquent with a slingshot and a spray paint can. But so it's like Mars and then we want to Venus to animate magnetize. And I thought maybe I could throw this back to you about the attention, the magnetizing, the pulse of Mars and Venus within us all, and that the violent tendencies that we don't want to be snookered or bamboozled into of 1968 outside angry convention, is more like directing to the Renaissance. Here we're going over here, fantastic music, fantastic creativity, fantastic satire, irresistible. Again, assuming cultural narrative lead, not just tantrum yoga having a fit, and reacting and, enough with, we understand the smashed cop car windows, but really, no, we got other stuff to do. We're going over here. And I want to just toss that back to you as the Mars-Venus cycle guide.
Well, as far as where it is right now, the fact that Venus is off the world stage, going through its own journey into the underworld and coming out, then we don't know what state she's going to be in when she comes out of the underworld in July. What we do know is that what she will be animating as an evening star at that point will be the elegance, the creativity, the sovereignty, and the autonomy of the Leo expression of the feminine in both men and women, the creator goddess, the one who can make it up any way she wants, and she does it because she's joyful when she does it. It's for the fun and the play and the creatorship of that position. And then when she contacts with Mars, which there will be a dance between her and Mars, exactly seen in the sky by early next year. But before that happens, we have Mars on his journey with Saturn and with Antares again. I mean, right now you can see them in the sky together. But that it's an even tighter conjunction that happens in late August. So there seems to be something leading up as far as what Mars is learning, hopefully in a good way from Saturn, with Antares, with the strength and the power of the heart of the Scorpion, we'll see what exactly is taking place with this in August. And if by that time, Venus will be up in the sky as an evening star. So they're all going to be gathering together their forces leading up to the time period at the end of this year, early next year. But it's the dance between a masculine love of truth and the feminine version of creating anything you want for the joy and the play of it, and that what a good team they could be if they could dance that way.
Yeah, and I think in the Renaissance and guiding and inclusivity and education and theater, it's like we want soundtracks, we want music, we want things in the street, we want to be like the South African firefighters arriving from South Africa on a 20-hour flight to Edmonton, Canada, to help put out the fires, and they were fire. They were like, ah, and the dancing and the singing, and it's like those are the fire responders. So that quality of, it'll be interesting. I don't know if you've taken a look at the Democratic and Republican conventions, but we should confer more on those. Venus will still be in the underworld, and remind our dedicated council again that, just even briefly, as you first guided me into this, the Anonymous is the Venus orbital cycle, that, Venus will be the morning star for 9 months, then get so close to the sun that she disappears where she is now, and still in the underworld until, you said, August? She's in the underworld?
No. The Venus is in the underworld until early July. She comes – or mid-July. She rises as an evening star – on the 13th of July.
Really?
Remind me, what are the dates of the Democratic Convention?
Well, the Republican Convention is July 18th, and the Democratic Convention is July 25th. And she doesn't quite look – she's only 11 degrees separated from the sun on the Republican Convention. You think that's enough to see, eh?
No, you can't. When she comes up in the evening sky – it's very dim. It's way different than when she rises as a morning star.
Right.
The moon, there will be a moon-Venus conjunction. Let's see. When is the first one? On the 3rd of August. So you're not going to really see Venus too brightly until around the first week of August. But so it's still like Venus is preparing. She's sort of gathering her strength. After you've been through an underworld journey, you've gotten your life back. It's like you still have to go through a time period of recovery. So by August, she'll be in a state of recovery. So Venus is really not that strong a feature as far as the active engagement of creativity in the early stages of during the Republican convention. I'm glad to hear, though, that it's not in the latter part of August that the Democratic Convention is, because that's where this exact gathering of Venus and Saturn, Mars, and Antares. The ancients thought that was a pretty ominous thing to have happen, where you've got Mars really bright overshadowing Antares, which Antares means, by the way, rival of Mars. And a lot of times when Mars passes Antares, they're about the same magnitude. But this is a Mars cycle where Mars is really bright. There's only one of its cycles where it gets even brighter than now. Now it's the same magnitude as Jupiter. So Jupiter and Mars are like the same magnitude of brightness. In a couple of years, we'll have an even brighter one. But right now, it's this engagement between Antares and Mars and Saturn. What does that actually mean? In the past, there's a lot of somewhat ominous stories about that, but we need to make a new story about it. It's harnessing the heart of the Scorpion and the power of the shamanic connection to the earth energies, to Kundalini energy, and connect that to a new Mars, a Mars that is into truth, and Saturn, which is not trying to stand in the way and to keep imposing the rules and regulations of patriarchy and the way it's been in the last couple of thousand years.
And let's go also to the – I like the ancient thought that when Mars is retrograde, meaning the illusion on Earth that it you know, is going backwards. That when Mars is retrograde, the aggressor always loses, which might be always true, but I like that it's even truer. And we go, all right, let's go for that. And also, I like thinking of planets that are retrograde as what they represent is going on a vision quest. You know, so in a sense, Mars to go find what is the purpose of the hero magician? What is the purpose of the wizard within us all going all the way back to find the Sermon on the Mount? I like just weaving that in because stations of that degree and picks up Terence McKenna. There we go. And on we go back there on its rendezvous with Saturn to redefine leadership, Saturn retrograde. And I love that as you know, King Arthur did not die, right? He goes to go hang out in Avalon to wait the world's call at a time of dire necessity. And we go, now yeah. Would be really good to have the equal positive Mars to dance with the equal positive Venus within everybody. But I do like the vision quest dynamic, and I like the aggressor always loses. I like creating boomerang, anything up to no good being revealed, rendered harmless, an occasion for mirth in the fullness of time. But I also like boomerang, you know, just anything up, you know, just boo and with a meringue, a boo that returns with a lemon meringue pie in the face. Do you think it's a good magic time for revelation that everything that everyone needs be made apparent?
Yes, in combination with what you said at the beginning, which it's very difficult right now to actually clearly see what is actually transpiring. There's so much up in the air. There's so much variability. The Uranus-Pluto effect is still out there currently. And some of these leading players on the world stage are going through Uranian cycles. And I can speak for you and myself, too. We're definitely in Uranian cycles. And the way I interpret that is that having the openness to be in a place where we can be hit by lightning in a good way.
Oh, yeah.
That it's inviting in of novelty, extreme novelty, in ways that shake up the assemblage points of where people believe things to be true. And in fact, now the foundation shatters so the light can get in, so new impulses can get in. That's the purpose of having this major Uranian time period, in my opinion.
No, and again, you know, cast off the shaman shadow, and everybody being the agents of trickster as keeper of democracy. I'm very fond of the image that Coyote tosses lightning at the closed circle loop and turns it into a liberating spiral. You know, to that may it be that our mode of engagement. Whoops. I see. May it be that our mode of engagement, yes, say the wolves, that our mode of engagement be fundamentally about healing and liberating even the dementors of doom, not counting on it, but willing, as the kind of evolution of the power of the wizard and the witch, a storyteller who's interested, not counting on it, but willing to liberate, you know, everybody. So so we all have these skills, you know, again, to dive into the that all of our magic and resources be available to us, and including certainly the power of language. Is that what you?
One of the things, Caroline, that I'm remembering now is that in our previous conversation, when we were talking about when you invoked it, the trickster and the coyote and so on, I think I was suggesting, or the suggestion actually came through from somewhere, about how to perceive Donald Trump that way.
Yes, and I was going the con man. I want to make a clear distinction, but back to you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not that he is aware of what the hell it is he's doing. It's just that when I look at the charts, his sun and north node and Uranus at 22 Gemini, 20 Gemini, 17 Gemini, the U.S. Mercury is there. You know, I mean, that happens to be the connection there. So it's like there's a certain con man / trickster element of the U.S. I mean, it's the Elmer Gantries of literature.
And no, it's actually the U.S. Mars. The U.S. Mars is 20.
Excuse me. I meant the Mars. Thank you. Right. Yes. But it's activating that same element even more so in the United States. And hopefully it will translate into awakening trickster energy rather than being fully conned.
Right. No, and I think that's part of the, you know, every dedicated teammate listening dynamic out there, this is why it's so crucial to be willing to be irresistibly eloquent in the Venus invitation, that people deeply want to know about the con. They deeply want to know about how they're being snookered and bamboozled. And that's the unifying kind of theme in every useful crime fiction thing, all the Norwegian crime dramas, all the Theta, whatever that they, people want to know about economic crime. That's why people are drawn to Donald Trump. You know, you're being snookered, but see him as the cunning man, the toxic mimic, the quite dangerous murderous sociopath, the hate monger. He's going, taking all of that appropriate wanting to know the con, to be free, the desire to be free, and conning them into, you know, the con of racism, that people actually, there's those people. It's like, no, okay. And part of the dynamic wizardry, I think, of Bernie and what he represents and the whole, you know, and that in all of us is, it's like, here's how you're being conned and here's what we're going to be doing. Right. And then Hillary for a long time wasn't really even in that conversation exactly. But we don't know what that's why I turned to you to wonder. Maybe it's too soon to wonder. We don't know. It's all in play.
There is another factor here just to keep in mind, since we are talking about Venus and Mars.
Yes.
And I was referring to how that this Venus cycle that is currently happening, the 584 days of the Venus cycle.
Yes,
that when Venus rises as an evening star, it is in the sign of Leo. Now, it always happens this way, that the overtone or whatever the particular major archetypal energy is of any Venus cycle, it starts out with Venus in Leo, rising as morning star. That was last year. And when she comes out of the underworld as an evening star, it's also Leo. The very first, that whole first month, that time frame when Venus is in the evening sky, beginning the 13th through about the 5th or 6th of August, Venus is in Leo. Now, I'm bringing this up not just to speak of the creative possibilities of the feminine principle as she comes out of the underworld after her initiation, is how much Leo there is on these charts of both Hillary and Donald. I mean, it's in a sense, Trump cannot be other than the way he behaves. Mars in Leo and 29 degrees Leo rising. I mean, that is exactly the star Regulus. I mean, he truly believes that he's the golden boy, the center stage, the king archetype, as it were. But then there's Hillary with Mars at 14 Leo conjunct Pluto and Saturn. So there's going to be so much that plays out in that time frame from mid-July through early August. And the way I'd like to see it is that this reborn Venus, representing the authentic the idealized version of the Amazon queen, the creative force of the feminine, being able to point out where the distortions are in the Leo expressions and the two people we're talking about.
Yeah, that's a tough bridge. It's a tough bridge. Anything could happen, and magic is a willingness to cooperate with everything. But that is tough because it's so many people have discovered so much about the complex duplicity of Hillary Clinton that they just go, like, I just can't, it is a gentle guiding to be able to go, well, part of the beauty of, you know, language or any trickster quality, you know, whatever we speak to one another is what we're drawing out from them. You know, the astrological charts are sets of instructions anyway, but you're feeling that, yes, okay, there's a Leo theatrical dedicated to greater good part of her, yes, in there that can be activated? Is that?
Well, maybe, but actually what I was suggesting, something a little bit different.
Okay.
I mean, a few astrologers have suggested that when Mars is at its retrograde, as it's in its retrograde loop, when it's exactly on her south node, that is the point where it'll come out, or she'll be indicted or whatever. However, what I'm suggesting is something a little different, which is that after Venus comes out of the underworld, during that time when Venus is actually in Leo as evening star, finally, after the underworld sojourn, that there will be something powerful that comes from the feminine, strong women, strong women. And I don't want to reserve it only to gender here, because when we talk about Capricorn, where there's the circle of grandmothers, where there are men that work for the circle of grandmothers, but this might be the guys, we could say, that are championing the strength of these Amazon queen women who will create something new, and not simply be the ones that are in Hillary's camp. In other words, they would be willing themselves to reveal to her what kind of a leader she possibly could be. But it's up to the women to tell her this stuff. I mean, she's already hated by enough men. I mean, but there's a whole bunch of women that are like on her team, and if they could actually tell her what they were seeing. Anyway, that's what I was looking
at. No, it's all in play. It's all in play. Again, that's right. And again, we concentrate on the desirable story, and there's the and then Bernie doing his weird so well, and apparently just keeping going. And again, shape-shifting. Yeah, people were bringing up over the last couple of weeks, the nefarious, complex backstage intrigues of, so much going on. And of course, the Trump people would like Hillary to be indicted at the after the Democratic convention, the worst possible time, and the other people would like them before the convention, and other people not at all. And so it is all a swirl, this quality of intrigue, and may it be positive intrigue. But I think also, underneath everything, okay, for all of us, the exposition and elimination of corruption is a big, let's go for the Mars and Scorpio kind of deep delving. Heard really great radio piece snippet, woman delineating, that the essence of all terrorism is corruption. And that's where the Grail legend begins. The land is ill, the king's dying because of, intrinsic use and abuse of rank and privilege, corruption. And that, if your sister, is raped or must sleep with the judge to have her case heard, and you come to the brother and go, we will create a moral state, then yeah. So the toxic mimic of, that arises from corruption. So I just want to say actually,
you're actually very much, by what you just brought up, brings up the other subject I wanted to briefly mention that might not be people in the U.S. are that aware of. What happened over here?
Yes.
With the election here in the Philippines, they just had an election for the new president over here.
Yeah,
and there is such a hunger around the world against to expose corruption. I mean, the Philippines is sort of in a sense a mirror of the United States. Most of the Filipinos would love to be another state of the United States, but they just put into office this guy who basically has told the Filipino population right now that if you see someone who's corrupt, you have permission to kill them. If they're a drug dealer, if they're corrupt, if they're a criminal, go ahead and kill them. We don't need any due process. And of course, that's why he won the election, because there's such a gap here between the rich and the poor. There is such a obvious 1% phenomena here of the rich lording it over the majority of the population that's poor, and the people have had enough and said we will even be willing to put this guy in, even if he becomes a dictator, if he gets rid of the corruption. I mean, it's come to that, really.
Right. Although he's even more extreme. He's like Donald Trump 10 times over. Right. He talks about
except for one exception. he's actually working class, you know, so that he is a totally opposed to the rich, what they call the imperial Manila. He wants to basically break it down so that the poor have opportunities in different parts of the country rather than the concentration of power in Manila, you know, like the way it is in Washington, D.C. to a certain extent. You know, so he wants to break that up. However, oh my God, the people are willing to have it be that far. You know, sure, you know, the police are all corrupt, so we'll just, you know, the president now said we can kill them ourselves, you know.
Very intriguing. Yes. So, right. Well, again. Yes. The con masquerading as the liberating. Everywhere. And I love Terry Pratchett's novels. And in his last one, there's a great chant to dispel the con, to dispel the glamour, the false thing that looks like the thing you want, but it isn't really at all. You know, it's yon ton tethera, and it's to dispel the false. You know, I want crowds around the world chanting yon ton tethera. Can't fool me, you toxic mimic of a corruption rooter guy. Do you feel any palpable, you know, insanity in the Philippines, your current world headquarters?
Well, let's just say that I have no real interest, neither Lynn or I have any real interest in being in Manila. So we're building a house up in the mountain province, up in a part of the Philippines, which is kind of like Ireland in Asia. So it's up at 5,000 feet. It's all indigenous. It's quite a marvelous little area. And they also feel the same way about Manila. They call it Imperial Manila. But the Philippines is just like... maybe in a sense, a more extreme example of what it is you're all experiencing over there in the U.S. right now. And the con, you know, there's such a hunger for the defeat of corruption, the exposing of the con, that you can go for a huckster. You can go for a person who's, dangling the simple solution about it's because it's the, it's because of the immigrants, or it's because of the Muslims and so on. Over here, it's not quite the same because Trump is a representative of the 1%. I mean, the billionaire, he'll run it like a business. But that's not true with the Duterte who just won over here. Still, you know, it's more extreme than Trump in the sense. Can you imagine? I don't think in the U.S. that you could go that far and say, forget the laws. If you see a criminal, just go ahead and kill them.
Well, he's not stopped short of that, Trump saying those things, accusing Obama of being complicit in the Orlando murders. The cunning man. I think Terry Pratchett's novel I Shall Wear Midnight is really good campaign coverage. You know, the only news to trust is the mythic news, and that's where the young girl witch is. Her job is to dispel the false and toxic glamour of the cunning man who catalyzes the mob mind. And it's a Neptunian frequency in which people say, I don't know what got into me. Right? I don't know why I said that, but it can draw through this murderous thing. And in Austria, right, they had a Trump-like, right-wing anti-immigrant fearmonger who was defeated by the kind of green sensible by only 30,000 votes, right? So it's all these issues are everywhere, you know, again, for humans to rise up in democratic animism and go, you know, we must partner with the earth, and here's what we've been rewarding. Not only in the tyrant tantrum yoga, but throughout culture, has not been wise Mars. I mean, obviously, you know, but even in the kind of media world as well. I mean, we have the man baby Trump, but in media world, it's you know, 14-year-old boy, sometimes 14-year-old smartass boy, and one of the great qualities we all saw Jon Stewart grow up. He's a guy now. He's a reflective, interesting, wise person with his beard and everything. We saw him from 14-year-old, you know, kind of smart-ass guy into that. And so that maturation of what do we reward in the Mars part of, again, everyone, men and women, you know, but it's been, you know, and then the extreme scary part has been the outsourcing to uninitiated Mars sociopathic, death frenzy. So we're in our final minutes here, but I want to hand it to you, you know, again, to your blessing for the Dance of Mars and Venus, your blessing for the wise leadership dynamic we could bring forth, or anywhere you want to go, Daniel.
What I was describing about Venus and Mars can be applied individually. We found in our school that the knowledge of what Venus or Mars is on your chart can be more useful, really, than the sun sign, as far as to identify what version of the masculine or feminine you came in to be. So we're having this free virtual seminar next Saturday, which will go into that and it's really, really available for people who do not have any astrological background to see how this operates. You can actually get so much information from it. One quick example, if I have just a few more seconds, Caroline,
sure.
Is that the late great Muhammad Ali, who just passed on, it's so informative to know that he had Mars in Taurus. I mean, the version of the masculine he came in to be, Mars and Taurus. And what is the thing he was most famous for saying? It's more like, I'm pretty. Don't forget to tell him I'm pretty. You know, it was his own aesthetics that in a sense was most important to him as on the level of what kind of man he was. So that's just one example. I have Mars in Scorpio. You have Venus in Scorpio. I mean, there's elements of what are purpose on the planet is relative to the achievement of what the objective of those particular archetypes are. So this thing we're doing next weekend is around that everyone.
And that's shamanicastrology.com. They can find out about the free virtual event, which will be starting at 4 p.m. California time. That's great. And then I will speak with you backstage about my Mars Venus return. I can't tell what that is. Teammates, again, as we sally forth, you know, it is a wild and shape-shifting time. Anything could happen. All is in play. So yes, really inviting everybody to the art form of directing collective attention. You know, yes, critique, and then over here to the desirable story. That's so crucial. I'll be giving the Monday, June 20th solstice address at Open Secret. You can, reservations are recommended, 415-457-4191. And that's in San Rafael, Open Secret San Rafael, with wonderful cohort Emma Kayla Gaston. And we are on our way out. Daniel Gemario, any blessing to the world in about 10 seconds?
Yeah. Idealism, perseverance, and the belief that that we can actually develop and build a new world.
That'll do. And irresistible eloquence all around. Thanks to the board ops everywhere. Erica Bridgman in Berkeley. I'm Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com. Thank you, Daniel Gemario, so much. And we will reconvene next week. Woof, woof, woof.